3. Kind of an unusual day. We're actually here on a Wednesday. And I'm actually at the Acme Comedy Company. And,
yeah.
Across on the other side of the stage, Mr. Brian Miller.
Hello, Skype. Your sponsorship is canceled for 1 week. you shall sponsor us again next week. This is the third one we've done live. The first one was live.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, too, yeah. Isn't it? It's, I come here a lot.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? It's nice.
Yeah,
They gave me free coffee.
Uh-huh.
If I leave fast enough, I'll get free coffee.
Club soda for me. I'm tanking up on the club soda for the reason which we'll get into in the third segment. But the first segment, based on a blog post that I made, is apparently somebody got under the skin of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Did you see this?
I did not.
Oh, no, apparently somebody.
They're easy to get under. Their supporters are easy to get under their skin.
Well,
They're the prickliest of the supporters, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
But you know, he's kind of got that easygoing attitude, like everything's a joke, and it's.
Well,
you know,
I think he's chill, and his supporters are prickly, and I think Hillary's prickly, and her supporters are inexplicably kind of chill.
Huh.
I would have definitely guessed that the other way around, but the Sanders guys are just angry.
Yeah. Well, there's a company called Liberty Maniacs, and what they do is it's a libertarian, I believe.
Terrible insurance company.
It's a
Come
what?
To Liberty Maniacs. We might give you some money back for your car. I don't know. We're crazy.
Yeah. Don't protect yourself from mayhem. He's your agent. So the Liberty Maniacs came up with a T-shirt, and it was Engels, Marx, Lenin, Mao, and Bernie Sanders. And then they took the Bernie Sanders logo and put that underneath, and underneath that it said, "He's my comrade." And it's a red T-shirt, and they put it up. They put it up on the web with a really funny description. They referred to him as, I believe, a curmudgeonly badger.
Sure.
They referred to Bernie Sanders and a description. And apparently, you know, it's just one of those things. It's one of those T-shirts that, you know, 1,000 T-shirts a day go on the web and, you know, and people, you know, maybe make a few bucks on it. But for some reason, this one got under the skin of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
It's funny because, he's a socialist. You named yourself that. I don't have a huge problem with that by any stretch, but you can't be that surprised when you call yourself a socialist. Somebody says, oh, you're with those other guys, the guys that you just said you're with. You literally associated yourself with them very directly.
I got in an argument with another comic, and I said, you know, well, he's a Marxist. It's like, oh, there you go again, have to call names. It's like, no, he's admitted he's a socialist. Yeah, but it's not the same as a Marxist. It's, well, wait a minute. Who do you think wrote, you know, where do you think the idea came from?
Yeah.
And you know, you cannot be a socialist and not owe a debt to Marx.
I think it's, you know, what's intriguing is that people – like he's a socialist. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to be a socialist. To me, it's the inversion of being a libertarian. I agree with both of their points sometimes, and sometimes I don't. But I think it's funny that people even who are liberals who get all mad, you called him a socialist. It's like, well, you're the one who's saying it's a bad word. I mean, you know, so which is it? Is it the worst thing in the world? Because if it is, then he is that. And if I'm calling him that and it's not bad, then why are you mad? It is weird. I feel like they've got to take the word back if they want to keep using it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like you can't be mad.
Exactly. But what they filed a suit and they sent a cease and desist order to the and it's all on my website, timsilegal.com. If you want to look at it, there's all the links are there. There's Washington Post actually published some of the letter, the cease and desist. They had 5 days to remove all the images from the internet. And then this is kind of funny. This part for me, I think, is hilarious. And then it goes on to say, you used a trademark, which is property. Which right away, that cracks me up.
That's the problem with the really extreme positions in general, is that like you always trip yourself up when you try to go for mainstream protection. You're like, the courts will fix it. It's like,
You're a socialist claiming a right to property. How can that doesn't work?
Here's a question. Do satire laws protect that? Because you could certainly make an argument that the shirt is a joke in a way.
But hear me out here, and this is even funnier. It is property of Bernie 2016 Incorporated.
Oh,
is apparently Bernie 2016.
That's like the equivalent.
The guy who is going around saying that the corporations are ruining politics.
That's like asking someone to borrow an Ayn Rand book.
Like, I don't think you understand this at all. If you can't buy one, you don't deserve one. No, that is very funny. And it's, you know, I always think it's such a bad move when people do stuff like that because, like,
you all they did is call attention to the shirt, call attention to the issue. You know, like it, the best thing that you can generally do is play the too big to care. You know, the cool guy in high school. That works 99% of the time in life.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, somebody made a shirt. Well, of course they're going to do that. Of course they're going to, you know, try to associate us with it, with bad socialists. We're good socialists, which I might add here, nobody who aspired to being a socialist thought they were going to be a bad socialist.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
Every single one said, you know, it's utopia is just around the corner. We're going to.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's like, well, yeah, that stuff that happened before, yeah, that was the bad socialism. This is what we're going to do now. This is going to be, you know, Fidel Castro. This is going to be good socialism. This is going to be we're going to work it out this time.
Well, I think it's appropriate because, you know, it's so academic, and that's classic academia, which is like, it's always the, well, if you just assume, it's like the old joke about The Economist, right? You ever you got a, like, it's like an economist and a welder and a craftsman on a beach, and they find a can, and the welder pulls and goes, oh man, if I can get some heat on this thing, I can melt the top off of this can and we can get this food. And then the craftsman's like, oh, if I make a fashion a tool and I can, like, punch the top of it open and we can eat it. And the economist looks at him and he says, first presuppose a can opener. Anything really academic always has that, like, on paper it works. And it's like, that's all it has to do, right? It just has to work on paper. Well.
And, yeah, that's my friend Dobie Maxwell always says that. He said that that's exactly what it is communism works on paper. And then he's got a couple more. Communism, erotic porn.
Yeah.
It works on paper.
You can't say that stuff out loud. It sounds ridiculous.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. I tried in the park and people were mad.
And the other thing that works on paper is a pet monkey.
Yeah.
It does not work so good actually when you bring one into the house. So it is now incredible. It's all over Facebook. People are posting. Well, that's probably why you don't see it because you've eliminated
my blissful Facebook seclusion.
Eliminated all your feed. A lot of actually a lot of listeners. I'm pretty sure because once my article on it started getting circulated, so a bunch of our listeners are familiar with the story already. Unfortunately, I don't think I gave them any more information.
here's a
couple laughs.
Here's the happy flip side of the T-shirt story. So my buddy Corey Adam, very funny comedian, is an enthusiastic libertarian. I don't know that you guys want him in your party, but he wants to be there anyway.
Oh, believe me,
that's the definition
if
of
we actually had a vote on who got to be in the Libertarian Party and who did not. There wouldn't be many people in the Libertarian Party. There are a lot of unwelcome characters.
But so he had a T-shirt that he loves. He's a big Gary Johnson supporter, and he texted me a picture that made me laugh really hard. And it was him was standing with his arm around Gary Johnson, who was laughing really hard. And Corey was wearing a shirt that said "Feel the Johnson."
Oh, that's good.
Good shirt, good reaction. I was like, good for you, Gary Johnson. That makes me like him way more.
Yeah. No, I actually met Gary Johnson. That's a nice thing. I think we talked about this before, is the Libertarian Convention are very accessible.
Oh, the Green Party, too. It was like, you met Ralph Nader because he parked your car when you went to pull into the ballet. Just making sure it's safe. Oh, don't worry. I'll get it taken care of for you.
Yeah, you know, it's a. I looked under the hood, and there was a safety recall in this model, and you did not. I would highly recommend that you get it to the. And if you didn't get a notice, here's my card. We can sue him.
You know what? Gary Johnson's selling carburetors down the street at market price.
I can't come with the segue there, but we're out of time for this one. We'll be right back.
back on the second segment of Rule of Three, here with Tim Slagle. Coachella is going on. This is the first thing that's made me feel really old.
Is I realize, Coachella?
Yeah. I mean, other things have happened, but because when I hear about Coachella, it's exactly the same as when I hear about, like, Darfur. You know, there's these faraway thing, and it sounds really bad, and I just know I'll never be there. That's the main thing I'll know, is that whatever happens there, it will not involve me. It's a 0% chance I'll ever be at Coachella, unless I fall out of a – unless I'm on a plane that crashes – into Coachella. That's the only way I'll ever be in Coachella.
Well, I'm a couple years older than you, and I'm embarrassed because when I first heard about Coachella, I thought it was a line of purses.
Or something you get from undercooked chicken at Hardee's. Oh, I got Coachella.
And then I saw a couple articles, and it's Vanessa Hudgens in Coachella. And it's like, oh, it's more than just a purse manufacturer. Apparently, it's a designer. It's Vanessa Hudgens.
Better she's lost wearing a lot of weight. Boy, she's really squeezing herself down. Have a burger, Vanessa.
And then, of course, you know, I find out it's a music festival. And I've known for a couple of years. I don't want to, you know, and I knew it was a music festival before Paul McCartney was there last year. Thank you very much.
Yeah. The hugeness of it is kind of new. It's been going on for a while, but I think it's maybe the last 3 or 4 years that it's been like this big,
yeah, enormous
cultural event. But what's interesting is I read an article about it that, or someone said that the reason that Coachella is so big and what sets it apart from some of the other big ones is that there's some celebrities in the audience and that there's no distinguishing or much less of a delineation between the performers and the people there, and so it's like if you're there. It's that great narcissism that we've got going on because we're all celebrities. Just by being at Coachella, I'm kind of a celebrity, and there's Vanessa Hudgens, and she's here, so she's a celebrity, and there's celebrities on stage. What's the difference between any of us?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you paid $182, and you're sleeping in a tent. And Vanessa Hudgens is getting the hell out of here.
You know, it's kind of the anti-punk, isn't it?
Oh, you're right.
Because the idea of punk was we're all the same. That just because we're on stage playing the music, we're all the same. But it's sort of the different where it's we're all working class.
Yeah.
Where it's Coachella is kind of we're all beautiful people.
That's fascinating. You're right. It is exactly the opposite. It's like we're all the same, but that's only because I'm so great.
Yeah. Yeah. When God separated light and dark, he separated Sex Pistols and Coachella.
Yeah. See, I have a bit of a my last big music festival experience was Bonnaroo. I went to Bonnaroo, which that is the big one in Tennessee. That's a big one though. Have you ever heard of that one?
I've heard of Bonnaroo.
I got engaged at Bonnaroo.
Wow.
Yeah. I got engaged in a tent, you know, on day three of a music festival.
So you popped the question at Bonnaroo.
Well, I wasn't intending to. I'm glad I did. I will say, like, a week later, my now wife, we've been married for 9 years, so it's okay. She, you know, it's cool. We passed long enough for this. She turned to me, she goes, we can take that back if you want. I understand the circumstances of that. And I'm like, no, I really did. I was really genuinely – I was thinking about it beforehand, but it wasn't a – you know.
Oh, so there was chemical influence.
I was at Bonnaroo. So I'll just say I was at Bonnaroo. But
I was one with Bonnaroo.
I will say part of the reason – I mean we'd been dating. We already lived together, so it wasn't like – yeah. It wasn't like some girl I met there. But the reason that I – what cemented it in my mind about why I wanted to get engaged was we were at Bonnaroo. It was really fun. We had a good time. This was back in 2004 or 5, I think, where there was friends. And but by day three, I was so sick of all these hippies, all these people that I thought I wanted to spend all this time around. You know, it's like all these artists and these cool people. I mean, oh, everybody's doing cool things. I'm so sick of everybody being cool. And I was so sick of all these people my age. Sick of veggie burritos. I was like, somebody should come in here and pose some order and some structure. You know, I was just like, and I was like, oh, God, she has nothing like all these freaking hippies. And I was like, oh.
she wanted to come here, but she's nothing like all these dirty hippies. I was like, oh, maybe I'm onto something here. And I actually called, I remember really distinctly on day two of Bonnaroo, I called my buddy Matt Martin, who worked in a comic book store with me. And he was, at the time, I was very liberal dude, and he was very Republican, and now we're both completely disenfranchised and ambivalent. But at the time, and I called him, I remember saying, Matt, can you just talk Republican to me for a little while? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, just talk about the market, just whatever. And I was like, I just need, I need it fleshed out. I need something.
Just say some dirty words like investment capital, profit margin.
That was kind of the beginning of the end of my enthusiasm with, you know, all that. The end of my sort of enthusiastic youth culture.
With hippiedom.
Yeah, hippiedom and just all that. It was like, I'd really just go to a little blues bar and sit in the corner and drink a beer and watch it and go to some big show. You know, that's – I became the stand-in-the-back guy at Bonnaroo.
Yeah, kind of the same reason why I cut off my dreadlocks. There's no surprise here. We all know I had dreadlocks, yeah. Right? Okay. It was twice in a year I ran into a situation where there was a little girl that confused me with her dad. I am not making this up. And it wasn't like, daddy, 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 it's so good to see you. It was, mommy, I don't want daddy here. Make daddy go. And I
said, because your jerk ass dad had dreadlocks.
I said, oh my gosh, I look like a crappy dad.
Yeah, that's true. Because like, you can be the dreadlock guy or the dad, but dad with dreadlocks, that is a Venn diagram that does not need to exist.
And it's, you know, kind of ironically, I just met the bartender here at Acme. I just met his daughter out in the, and she's just adorable.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And so he has renewed my faith in the possibility of being a good dad with dreadlocks.
Yeah, but he's also a jazz drummer, so he gets bonus points. I think if you're a libertarian comedian, you actually lose points on the dreadlocks. My favorite is when people find out that you had dreadlocks. The look, what? And I was like, I've seen pictures.
Yeah, there was I was at Zany's a couple weeks ago, and a bunch of kids doing showcases, and a couple of the kids found my 8x10, and it was like really kind of embarrassing. It's like, oh my god, look! And they're pointing up, and I know where my picture is. I think Everybody's got their 8x10.
Mine's right by the men's room.
Yeah, everyone knows where their 8x10 is.
I'm by Pete Lee. I'm in handsome company.
And they're pointing it out. I go, oh, geez, they found it. It's like, no kidding, really?
Ooh, you know, Zany's is like a high school yearbook of stand-up comedy with all those headshots, you know? It's like all the high school yearbooks because the old pictures are up there. I love it. I love looking at the walls there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. There's one wall that has more dead people.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
did it start that way, or did Bert just need to arrange something?
No, it was where the picture started.
Oh, that makes sense, right? So just natural sedimentary rock. The oldest layer is at the bottom, and then you move on up. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was really kind of funny. There's a do you know who John Fox is?
Oh yeah,
the
famous guy used to pleasure himself into the mayonnaise jars and all the comedy condos.
That's the rumor. That's the rumor.
It's the rumor that he started. The best case scenario is John Fox is the guy who claimed to masturbate into all the mayonnaise containers.
Yeah, John Fox is the reason why no one touches the mayonnaise at the Comedy Condo.
Yeah. I even bring my own salt just to be on the same side.
So he, it was funny. His picture, of course, was on that wall.
Oh, sure.
And he was talking to the manager. Every time he'd come in, he's going, you got to get my picture off that wall. I don't want to be on that
bad
wall.
Bad mojo.
You got to get my picture off the wall. And honest to God, he was there once, and he came in with a screwdriver. He said, I'm getting my picture up off the wall. And he took it off the wall all by himself.
Wow.
Walked across to the other side of the club and screwed it into the wall directly beneath Sam Kinison. who at the time was still with us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he had no idea.
We're starting our own wall.
It's like, well, you know, apparently, John, it's not the wall, it's you.
Oh, yeah. He's like the Typhoid Mary of headshots.
Yeah, it was like a couple months after he put his picture 8x10 under Sam Kinison.
Wow.
We lost Sam.
Well, the only way that story would have been more delightfully ironic is if he would have perished on it. Like, and then the air conditioner fell and landed on him while he was screwing the new headshot in. I'm reading a biography of Rod Serling, so I'm all steeped in Twilight Zone. So, yeah, that'll go ahead and finish up the segment. How old am I? I can't go to Coachella because I'm too busy rewatching all the Twilight Zones in chronological order. to go along with the biography that I got from the library. I'll see you after I return from the grave.
And, we'll see y'all in the next segment. Yes, we are. Back with the rule of three, the final segment. We teased it in the first segment. The reason why I'm drinking club soda tonight is because it's crash and burn week here at Acme Comedy, and that's why I'm in town. And the reason why I'm drinking club soda is one of the comics is likes to order.
He doesn't just like to order; he likes to order for you.
Yeah,
I worked with this this gentleman a couple of weeks ago. And I think I just now started feeling better.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a great time, though, as best I recall.
Oh, for those of you who aren't familiar, Crash and Burn, it's a comedy series I've been doing here at Acme. This is the fifth year running.
Fifth year? It's like an institution.
Crash and Burn, yeah, it is. This is the fifth year running. The idea is that it's four headliners, and we all try to come up with a new act over the week, a new 20-minute set.
And so the trickiest part is the first day, Tuesday, which is the first show. You cannot have said – whatever you say on stage, you could never have said it before.
Never.
On,
you can say, you could have said it before, never on stage.
Never on stage. Right. You could say, yeah.
It's a story. Maybe it's a story you told with your – you know, you told with your buddies and, yeah. You know. Or,
but you can't have worked on it at an open mic at all.
No.
Is the idea. It's got to be
– not at all. Brand new.
It's so great to watch that Tuesday too because – I mean everybody who does it is so pro that like even their version of not doing well is hilarious because they're still getting in punchlines and it's
– oh,
it's
yeah.
It's great to watch that. That energy adrenalizes them, and so you get some great performances out of people because they're really good people, but they're having to focus in a way they might not have had to focus.
Minnesota comedy shows up en masse on the Tuesday night
at
Crash and Burn because there is nothing funnier to another comic than watching a comic bomb.
Absolutely.
That is like if there's a comedy heaven, if there's an ironic Rod Serling comedy heaven, it's the reward for being a good comic is you get to watch guys in comedy hell having to do 45 minutes.
imagine how delightful it would be if you had like Netflix, you know, but like it was just like you're like, who do I want to see bomb? You're like, I wonder what old Susmoach looks like when he's struggling. Let's dial up Pat Specials here, you know, just make him bomb for a while. Like,
oh my gosh, yeah, and it's sort of like the Sims. You get to actually pick who's going to be in the audience. Yeah. Let's see, I'm going to give them two bachelorette parties, one drunk.
Sim comedy. You should patent that. Sim comedy club. I like that idea.
I'm a great idea guy.
Wait, you know, the first time you did Crash and Burn, I remember. I mean, it was a pretty kooky concept. I mean, it was. I don't think there was any guarantee in anybody's mind that it was gonna work.
Yeah, no, it was the first year we did it. It was just a lark. I had pitched the idea to the proprietor here at Acme, and he kind of liked the idea because he's really big on writing.
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, let's give it a try. Let's see what happens." And since then, in those 5 years, I've noticed that a lot of comics have started doing similar concepts around the country.
Yes, this was the first thing that I saw that was anything like this at all.
Yeah, so it kind of is now, and what's great, it really goes good with the state of comedy today because comedy is really writing focused. It's the best comics, the Ron Whites, the Louis C.K. are the people that are really prolific and that are actually able to come up with a new hour once a year.
You have to. It seems like
so. It kind of it kind of encourages that sort of discipline.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this versus like the Setlist show, which is a very cool show and a great. Speaking of concepts that have been ripped off, holy smokes!
Yeah,
Setlist has been ripped off more than anything, as far as I can tell. But Setlist is really different because it's fun. But like you get that Setlist, you do those jokes. It's sort of situational and they go away. It's a great show. But what Crash and Burn is interesting because ideally at the end you get. Anywhere between 5 and hopefully, ideally, 20 minutes of jokes that work.
Yeah, what it reminds me of, and I've been saying this over and over this week, is kind of what it reminds me of is the golden age of the variety show, when a bunch of writers would go into the room on Monday morning, and pat each other on the back for the show that went on last night, and then go to their typewriters. You know, it was what everyone, you know, and growing up watching the Dick Van Dyke Show. Where Buddy, Sally, and Rob would all sit in that little office throwing darts, trying to come up with funny concepts. I mean, that's for me, that was the illusion of comedy writing. I'm you know, I'm sure it was nothing, nothing like that. I can't really see.
It was just Carl Reiner typing all that crap by himself. He's like, what if it took nine of me to make this amazing script?
Yeah, exactly. And Sally always had to do the typing. Sally always typed unless Rob was doing it by himself.
That's true.
I don't think Buddy ever typed. He just always dictated.
That sounds like a real writer's room. One guy who doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I buy that. Buddy would just come in with a gag when it was needed.
That's I like to think of that as my role. Do you think Crash and Burn would not work in a lot of other places? Like Minnesota audiences are essential for Crash and Burn to work.
Acme audiences.
Oh, an Acme audience. Right. Yeah, I'm not mistaken because I go to the shows. I haven't done one yet. I got to keep giving you crap about it so I can get in my place in line.
Yeah, no, you're trust me, you're in line.
And it's a big line of really impressive comics. Everyone who's Emily Galati, Dwight Slade, Tim Harmston. There's been so many. Did Chad do it yet? Has Chad Daniels done it yet?
No, he has not.
Oh, he would be great too. Yeah, no, there's so many good comics who've done it and. But,
Pete Lee, Tracy Ashley.
Yeah, Pete Lee. That's what I was saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tim Bador.
The audiences feel like to me have really grown. Don't you think?
Oh man, yeah. Last night we were pretty much at capacity. Yeah,
the first year it was like at least spottily attended. Right.
At least half the people were familiar with what we were about to do.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, when you would – one of the – like the first year, you know, you would come out and say, hey, welcome to Crash and Burn. How many people do you basically know what they're here for? And there would be a smattering of applause. And some people were just like, hey, we came to Acme. And they still got a great show.
Yeah.
But now it's like people are coming for this specifically. And people – I've heard people – or some of the Acme audience members that I've become friends with, they say like, oh, I'm going on Wednesday and I'm not going on Friday late. You know, like people go to multiple shows. They really want to watch the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's kind of like the same fascination that you get when you go to a pizza place where the chef is you can see the chef. You can
Ooh,
see
the guy, it was like the Benihana of comedy,
see the guy,
right?
Yeah. See the guy tossing the dog. Yeah. See the comic technique right there on the table, smacking, slicing up the shrimp with a cleaver and flipping the tails into his hat.
Yeah, that's it's really a great show. And have you felt like it's evolved from a performance perspective as the guy who runs it? Have you changed much about it?
Yeah, when we first did it, we all took turns. We all took I can't remember if we had a host or just on the weekend we had a host and it was just the four of us. Mm. By the second year, I took over the hosting duties because it was a slot that no one wanted to do.
Sure.
And I said, well, it's my show. You know, what the heck? I'll be front. I'll take the, you know.
Yeah.
I'll jump on the hand grenade. I'll be the first one out. Maybe kind of a mistake this time because the bits that I decided to close on, Mary Mack was the first act out.
And oh, no. Thank you, Tim, for doing that clitoris material right before me.
Nothing is funnier. There's only one thing in the world funnier than Andy Erickson when she's mad and or drunk, and that is when Mary Mack hearing her take on whatever the last joke was. Those two things nothing is funnier than those two things. I would watch a comedy show exclusively composed of those two things. I'd be very happy.
So, yeah, so it's, you know, as far as that goes. But a lot of the format is still the same. The rules that we have of nothing on stage that you've ever done before, we kind of stick to that hard one. And then the other rule that we came up with the first year that I think is fun is you got to be off script by Saturday.
Oh, interesting. No notes, no.
No, yeah, you can bring the notes on stage, but the audience knows that you're supposed to be off book by Saturday.
Sure.
So if you start stuttering and you don't know where you are and you turn around and you have to pick up your notes and look at them, the audience, you know, thanks for playing. And that gives it kind of a game show aspect.
Yeah. It's a really great show. It's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's not to taunt you anymore, but it's really fun to be in.
Yeah, no, because I've gotten to sit on some of the writers' meetings, you know, and just pitch in jokes and stuff, and it's just fun because you get four people who are great at writing. All
four people who are actually have some success in the industry.
Yeah,
you know, and normally you don't get to work with peers. Normally you work with somebody starting out, somebody that's been doing it for a little while, and a peer.
Yeah,
you know that's as far as a headliner. You get to see how your peers think, how their comedy processes, How they make the pizza.
Well, you know, I always say writing, especially comedy, but writing is a lot like tennis and sex. It's only fun to do if the other person's just as good at it as you are.
Which is why it's fun to listen to the rule of three.
And what you're doing while you listen to the rule of three. If you're playing tennis while you do it, that's fine with us. Or whatever you're doing.
It's all the episodes, of course, at timslegel.com.
And brianmillercomedy.com, Brian with a Y.
You got them up yet?
Yeah, there's an episode player. Andy Erickson's got an episode player.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, by the way, the person who makes my website, significantly more successful than me. It's embarrassing every time I have to email. Hey, can you stop being on NBC for a minute to put that I'm going to be up at Bonkers Casino for a Tuesday night show in the UP?
Boy, that should be motivation right there to learn a little HTML, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, as long as Andy Erickson's nice, I'm going to keep being lazy. Thanks, Andy. You're the best.
Hey, we'll see you all next week.